Today we read from the book of Acts about the early ministry of the Apostle Paul. Paul has had his road to Damascus experience, which seriously turned his life around, and he has become an intense advocate of the gospel. Then, in a vision or a dream, he has felt the call to move to Gentile territory. In today's reading, he makes his way to the ancient Roman city of Philippi, where he encounters a community of women who are clearly seeking the ways of God. During the night, Paul had a vision. There stood a man of Macedonia, pleading with him and saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." When he had seen the vision, we immediately tried to cross over to Macedonia, being convinced that God had called us to proclaim the good news to them. We set sail from Troas and took a straight course to Samothrace, the following day to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is a leading city of the district of Macedonia and a Roman colony. We remained in this city for some days. On the Sabbath day, we went outside the gate by the river, where we supposed there was a place of worship, a place of prayer. And we sat down and spoke to the women who had gathered there. A certain woman named Lydia, a worshiper of God, was listening to us. She was from the city of Thyatira and a dealer in purple cloth. The Lord opened her heart to listen eagerly to what was said by Paul. When she and her household were baptized, she urged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come and stay at my home." And she prevailed upon us. Our second reading comes from the book of Revelation, the vivid vision written by John of Patmos. It's a picture of the world as it will be when God restores everything. Today, the vision is of the holy city, the new Jerusalem. And in the spirit, he carried me away to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city of Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God. I saw no temple in the city, for its temple is the Lord God the Almighty and the Lamb. And the city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God is its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Its gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. People will bring into it the glory and the honor of the nations, but nothing unclean will enter it, nor anyone who practices abomination or falsehood, but only those who are written in the Lamb's book of life. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. On either side of the river is the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, producing its fruit each month. And the leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations. Nothing accursed will be found there anymore, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. And there will be no more night. They need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thank you, Jim and Gina. Thank you. Will you join me in prayer? Any of you done any family history work in your family? Anybody? Yeah? You done? How about genealogy research? Anybody look back on, like, for your ancestors that go way back? Yeah, a few of you. In my living room, on the wall, there's a really neat, I think they call it a shadow box. It's like a picture, only it's thick with the glass, and in it are items that are, it's an amazing thing, that has a picture of Trina's late father and a bunch of articles from his time in World War II when he was, for 3.5 years, a prisoner of war. And it is a stunning window into that time in his life. Some years ago, my dad did some research into our family background, and particularly into his grandfather, my great-grandfather, Frank Sparks, who was part of a surveying expedition to the Yukon, from the coast up over the Chilkoot Pass on the Chilkoot Trail to the headwaters of the Yukon River, building a scow there and going down the Yukon River, building a place on the border of the Yukon and the and Alaska called Boundary Hall. He was with a surveying expedition led by William Ogilvie, who eventually became the commissioner of the Yukon. This is the year 1887, 1888. They went over a period of about 18 months, through overwintered in Boundary Hall, and then scaled the north end of the Rocky Mountains down to the Peel River and the mouth of the Mackenzie River. An amazing story. He knew nothing of that, or very little of it. His grandfather had told him very little. And so they went to the Yukon, my mom and dad, and in Dawson City, they hit the family archives jackpot. For in Dawson City, they found a notebook and a set of letters and a picture. The notebook was written by my grandfather, who was keeping track of lists and temperatures and just a pile of stuff, information throughout the trip. The letters were between him and another guy who had been on the trip in their later years, like when they were thinking back on the trip and how it had gone. And this is the picture. And the arrow points to my great-grandfather, Frank. This is the scow that took them down the Yukon River and two Peterborough canoes in the back. Well, the discovery of this for us was this, like, this window into what it was really like for one of our family members back then. The hardship, what this Ogilvie character was like in the middle of the winter on the border of the Yukon and Alaska. It just gave us a sense of the real lived experience of it. Now, if you were asking about our Christian family heritage, and you want to know what it was like for the first Christians in the middle of the first century, the earliest level of our understanding of the Christian community, what Christian community in its earliest form was like. Well, one key place to look is the book of Acts. And the go-to passage for that window into our past is the one that Gwenda read this morning. In this chapter, we have a stunning window of the earliest layer of Christian community outside of Judea and Samaria. It's maybe 20 years after Jesus died. 20 years. That's not very long. We are in the Roman city of Philippi with its big walls and its gates. We are in... And what we are told is that when the Apostle Paul went there, he went looking for followers of Jesus where he supposed he would find them outside of the city gates down by the river. He supposed that. I wonder why he supposed they would be there. And he was right. There he found a circle of women, Jewish Christians, because virtually all Christians in those early years came out of the Jewish community, and other interested Gentiles, like Lydia. And there they were praying outside the city down by the river. Some background. Philippi was a Roman stronghold in the southeastern corner of Europe. And this was a time when Judaism had a tense relationship with Rome, and the followers of Jesus had a tense relationship with their Jewish brothers and sisters. As long as Jews didn't kind of kick up a fuss anywhere, cause any trouble, then the Romans kind of left them alone. But if they stepped out of line, the full weight of Roman control came down on them hard. So anytime followers of Jesus emerged in synagogue life, it kind of threatened the tenuous stability of the community. And the result was that if you were a Christian, a follower of Jesus, then you had to watch it, not just because of the Romans, but because of some of your Jewish brothers and sisters, who understandably didn't want you to cause a fuss. So as a result, Christianity, at this layer of its life, was kind of a Jewish underground movement. But it was also popular with anyone who also found themselves on the margins of society and under the grinding thumb of Rome. So it became this eclectic bunch of marginal people. This particular circle, mostly women, gathered outside the city gates to pray. It was an underground charismatic community which had all the markings of counterculture. They shared everything in common. Women were prominent. Turns out it ended up attracting slaves. It attracted some Gentiles. The early Christian term for what we have here outside of the gates of Philippi is koinonia. It's the term. And it means communion. And not just communion like we're going to have it here, but the essence of community shared. Communion. An intimate and radical sharing of things. An idealistic community where all things are held in common. Koinonia also means a quality of being together that is spiritual and deep and sacred. It is the spiritual heart of what we do around the table, koinonia. It's actually the spiritual heart of what we do in the world as Christians. And in the book of Acts, we get this picture of our family heritage in Philippi, and it was koinonia. And interestingly, that picture becomes a spiritual source of all kinds of idealistic actions that Christians have taken throughout the years. It's part of what sparked the vision of the Holy City, where the gates are open wide and all who would can enter and no one is denied. Koinonia. It inspired monastic movements from about the 5th century onwards, where people gave everything they had to the community and they lived together in prayer and work. In Canada, the social gospel roots of the United Church of Canada in which we believe our faith needs to shape how we live collectively, points us back to koinonia, the koinonia of the early church. It is a collective vision. It's not just about me. It's about us. We are our sisters and brothers keepers, actually. Anybody recognize this quote? Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Anybody recognize it? It's inscribed beneath the Statue of Liberty. And it's the vision of welcome that is embedded in the founding of the United States of America. Now, I'm going to leave you to speculate about where that vision lives in the collective psyche of our neighbors to the south today. But the fact remains, the vision of radical welcome and a place for all, especially the vulnerable, is the core inspirational vision in the formation of, well, the United States of America, and it springs from our forebears in the faith, our family history, the koinonia of the very beginning. Which brings me to our refugee project. And why we would do this. I want to try and show you a video, a Skype conversation between Anya and Habib and the father of the Hamoud family, describing what they are experiencing as they are refugees waiting for the next step in their life. Are we going to be able to pull this off? You may have to drag it across.
الحياة الحياة بالنسبة لي أول شيء بلشت بانقطاع الكهرباء مع مي مدل فيه صار في خوف صار في رعب صار في فزع قلة مواد غذائية قلة أكل قلة شرب وقصف وضرب ويعني وصار في تهجير للعالم بلشوا بيشغل طلعت الناس من الزبداني وطلعتنا من الزبداني هاي اللي اضطرنا إنه نطلع من الزبداني أصعب موقف إنه نحن طلعنا من البيت وتهجرنا من الزبدان بصراحة يعني والبيت راح وعمليات أمس وضرب للأطفال